aboard, you people. Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence.
I don't know about you, Ro, but I feel like it's a good thing that Jason Van Dyke took the stand and for people to see what he has to say, and perhaps for the jury as well. I know that defense attorneys wrestle with that decision, but it feels as if it's good for the city, if not the trial, for him to hear from him directly.
Yeah, Mike Monaco is joining us right now, and in terms of legal analysis here, you had made the argument for the last couple of weeks. You thought it was unlikely that he would make the a case like this would put the defendant on the stand, but yet they did it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I wasn't sure what he would say. Why he shot 16 times, and he didn't say that. He talked about why he did shoot. And then he talked about a second round of shots after he fell down to the ground. He kept shooting. Mm-hmm. But the prosecutor didn't cross-examine him much on that. Why did you shoot each time? I would have gone through each, if I was the prosecutor, I would have gone through each shot. When you shot this one, why did you shoot, you thought that was necessary, this one was necessary? And the other reason, which I was surprised, the prosecution in their opening statement said that Officer Van Dyke shot him because this fellow had the gall or whatever he said to ignore the police, and she didn't cross examine on
audacity. Was the term that was used in the open.
That's right. To audacity to ignore the police, and she didn't cross him on that at all as to whether that had anything to do with why he shot him. So he was emotional. He got choked up talking about it. He was a bit snippy, I guess, is the word that people have used in describing how he answered questions on cross-examination. But it's interesting. This week we've seen two people testify with a bit of a snippy attitude.
We have a little bit of that. Let's listen. This is what, if you're just joining us now, this is what it sounded like.
Now, you stopped shooting because your gun was empty, correct?
Yes.
And it wasn't because you thought the threat was over with, right?
I'm sorry.
It wasn't because you thought the threat was over with, right?
Between the time I stopped shooting and the time I reloaded, the situation had drastically changed.
Really? What changed?
It was no longer a threat by the time I reloaded my weapon and brought it up to the ready position.
Why wasn't he?
In those couple of seconds, he had stopped moving.
If you're the jury and you hear that, are you taking from that solace or horror?
I think they're seeing a real live human being in a real serious situation. And I think he did give that, and I think Anna's correct in that sense, that he showed the jury really the pressure he was under, the stress he was under, the shock he was under after he did the shooting. To that extent, I think he did. I suppose it was good that they called him as a witness.
There seemed to be a lot of him relying on what I thought then and what I know now are two different things.
Right.
Meaning what we all saw and were horrified by, the 16 shots on that video, and how he remembers feeling, whether he was backpedaling, and the video shows he wasn't, but he said he felt as if he was moving backwards as Laquan was coming toward him. And there was a lot of relying on that.
Let's play the audio of that moment.
Well, you actually went to the end of your squad car, right?
I know that now, yes.
Could have went back around to the squad car, so the car was between you and Laquan, correct?
There was no time for that.
Well, you had 6 seconds before you pulled the trigger the first time, right?
And in that 6 seconds, he got a lot closer to me than I ever could have gotten away from him around the squad car.
And you got a lot closer to him, too, didn't you?
I know that now, yeah. Not intentionally.
Pardon?
Not intentionally.
Not intentionally?
Well, I thought I was backpedaling that night.
What?
Miss, I thought I was backpedaling that night.
You thought you were backpedaling as you're firing shot after shot after shot?
What I know now and what I thought at that time are two different things.
Is there a significance to that for him? Because it may have been different in the police report than it was.
Yes,
on the video.
That's true. They cross-examined him several times on what he said to the police in the police report, and he said, I was in shock at the time I said that. So I guess that
so his recollection, though, but they've had other witnesses today, specifically. They had a witness leading up to him today that talked about how trauma memories are very different than static memory.
Right. The psychologist talked about
that. He said there's tunnel vision, there's tunnel hearing, that an officer responding to an emergency, a threatening situation, might respond in a way where you think you're firing a few shots, but you're actually firing more than that. He seemed to sort of make up the difference between what we saw in the video and the way he first reported it to investigators and the way he was staying with that testimony in court today.
Right. I thought that psychiatrist or psychologist did a good job today for the defense of explaining that kind of
the first
witness today.
All right, now in court, as we are watching here, what's happening is that the lawyers are conferencing. There, this may be the last witness called by the defense.
Right.
Now, that would mean that all testimony would be over here.
No. Or the prosecution may call rebuttal testimony.
They may call rebuttal witnesses.
Right.
Right? Okay. So if there is rebuttal testimony, it would be by the prosecution. That would be tomorrow. And then does the defense get another?
The defense has what they call surrebuttal. They could do that after if the rebuttal testimony brings up new information, the defense could arguably bring up surrebuttal.
So we understand that if that is to occur, that will happen tomorrow.
Right.
And I think that's probably what they're talking to the judge about right now, about what the scheduling would be for tomorrow. And then there is the possibility that another day will be taken off here.
Thursday?
Before there is a closing argument. Hmm. And then the instructions, and then the jury gets it. I do wonder if the judge, who is a no-nonsense judge, he locked up a reporter today.
That's right.
I mean,
believe that? Yeah. When's the last time you've heard of something like that?
Let's just talk about that for a second.
We should. Yeah.
They arrested a reporter in the courtroom.
Cuffed
and
him.
Put him in handcuffs and took him out because he was recording something.
His name is Zachary Siegel, excuse me. He's a freelance journalist, works for Slate, New York Times Magazine, Wired and a number of other a number of other publications. But he is they said that he was recording and that another person in next to him saw that he was recording and they took him out in cuffs.
Man's in cuffs.
$1,000 and they posted the $100 bond, and I think he's on his way out, but other reporters pooled their money to get $100 together.
That does
how
sound
many
like
reporters? Yeah. How many reporters
I know that's a great question. I think there are a number of them.
To get $100. Yeah. Now, talk show hosts would just go here. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
right. Here.
Right.
Yeah. Lawyers would do the same.
Yeah. You for sure, Ro. No problem. Yeah.
All right. Stand
you
by.
Carry $100 just for that reason, don't
that's
you?
Well, for
you
sure.
You never know.
Yeah. I carry five. I carry five in case it's a $5,000 bond.
Right.
All right. Hold on 1 second. We'll come right back and we'll get more reaction from this. And I believe we will have an answer from the courtroom as to what exactly has gone on here. And your thoughts, 312-981-7200, what you've heard today and what you think about the Jason Van Dyke on the stand in his own defense, in his own words. Judy's got the WGN news update.
Yes, emotional and testy as that Chicago police officer takes the stand in his own defense today.
They're Chicago, they're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten. Get real in the morning with the WGN-TV Morning News Team, weekdays 4 to 10.
All right, the trial of Jason Van Dyke at the criminal courts building has recessed for the day. Mike Monaco is joining us right now, our legal analyst, and we're going to talk, I think, in just a few minutes also to our reporter on the scene, Eric Rung, and maybe even Jason Meisner from the Tribune, who was sitting next to the reporter, got arrested today in the courtroom, and for exactly what he was arrested, we will get the answer. I'm hoping and assuming. All right, let's talk about what is happening here. As it's arrested, we expect that the prosecution, well, the defense will rest tomorrow, and the prosecution may begin a rebuttal case. We're not sure. It's up to them. If you were the prosecution, would you put on a rebuttal case?
Well, I'm not sure what evidence they have, but it sometimes makes sense to put on a rebuttal if you can have some specific evidence that would undermine some particular big point on the defense. You don't bring small points up on rebuttal. It's got to be a major issue.
Mike, what about the decision to have him testify? I know that's one that defense attorneys really wrestle with. And talk about the risks, and do you think they overcame the risk with made it a positive by having Jason Van Dyke speak to the jury, speak to the court?
Well, I think they did. I mean, I think even though he didn't talk too much on direct about why he ended up shooting so many times. He did talk about why he shot the first time, talked about he was in fear. He looked in his eyes and he felt in fear, and talked about how he got there knowing that this fellow who he had never met had stabbed a tire of a police car and tried to hit a windshield of a police car, and that he was and nobody was stopping him. Now, one interesting thing, apparently he said to his partner, Mr. Walsh, Officer Walsh at the time, oh my God, we're going to have to shoot him. We're going to have to shoot the guy. Something like that.
Ben Bradley is joining us now from the WGN-TV newsroom, and that, I don't think, was a particularly good moment for the defense here, was it?
No, it wasn't, and it went to his state of mind as he approached that scene, with adrenaline running, with forming an opinion as you're hearing the police chatter over the radio, and it all goes to the mindset that he approached that incident with. You know, but let's not overlook the fact that you had a Chicago police officer on the stand testifying, about him killing another human being. That is such a rare moment, and it was televised for everybody to see.
Never happens.
And you saw Jason Van Dyke get emotional. You saw him tear up. You saw him, not look like a monster that I think the silence has circled around him for all of these years, creating impressions on every side. And so it was good to actually hear from him. You know, we can parse it from a legal perspective about whether or not this was, good or bad for his case. But don't you think, and Mike, I'd be curious your thought, isn't it always good to make it look like your guy is caring, is affected by a situation like that?
Yes, I think it is. And unless there's a terrible thing that's going to come out on cross, which didn't happen here.
Right.
I thought it made sense to call him.
The only thing I think that they sort of pointed out, the prosecutors, was that his testimony conflicts with the actual video footage. I think that's the part where there's a little bit of room there. And she even asked, it was your testimony that Laquan McDonald never turned his back to you. Yes, that's right. Well, then how did you shoot him in the back? Okay,
but that was after he shot.
They have an explanation.
Right, that was after he shot him, and he said he spun.
I thought the moment that struck with me was, in the first several minutes, as Van Dyke's attorney is questioning him on the stand, he didn't say Laquan McDonald's name. He just kept referring to him as a male black in a black hoodie and blue jeans. Van Dyke, over and over again.
Strange choice.
Male black in black hoodie, blue jeans. Male black in black hoodie and blue jeans. A little later, Van Dyke did say Laquan McDonald's name, but I just thought, that's cop speak, but it also again goes to the mindset that he was approaching this scene with.
Mm-hmm. And that may be part of the most damaging things we heard today.
Yeah.
Here's the let's go back to the "Oh my God, I'm going to shoot the guy" portion of the testimony today, because I think if there was any kind of a way that the prosecution can sew its case together here, Mike Monaco, it's by using this.
How about what you said to Detective Walsh on the way there? Oh my God, we're going to have to shoot the guy. Why'd you say that?
I didn't talk to a Dr. Walsh.
A Detective Walsh.
Officer Walsh, ma'am.
Officer Walsh?
Yes.
Okay. Why'd you say to him, oh my God, we're going to have to shoot the guy?
I thought the officers were under attack.
Okay, at the point that you thought...
Ma'am, I'm still trying to answer. I thought he was under attack, and the whole thing was just shocking to me.
There's a couple moments there in that exchange that I think are problematic for Jason Van Dyke. One, he probably knew what the prosecutor meant, not Detective Walsh, not Dr. Walsh. I'm going to kind of guess that. If he did know that, he should have just gone with it instead of Officer Walsh.
It's easy to say that, but you know how much pressure this young man is under?
I understand.
It's under an immense pressure.
I'm just saying.
And being told to think about every word.
Yeah.
I totally.
And his lawyers probably said, hey, if you feel like she's going too fast, that they're questioning you in a rapid fire format, here are a couple of techniques to slow down the pace to gather your thoughts.
All right. But if you're in the jury and you're watching that, I think that strikes a blow. Right there.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
And the other piece there too is that it goes to the notion of premeditation.
Yeah.
That's the key to this case for the prosecution. They are trying to prove in a first-degree murder charge that Jason Van Dyke got out of that car with the intent of killing Laquan McDonald, as opposed to defending the community, defending, you know, all those things that are the charges of the officer.
Well, I think that's what they have to do, because he is charged with first-degree murder, which is you have to have intent to do that, and that's the hardest part of this prosecution's case, because they have so little evidence indicating that Officer Van Dyke did intend to kill him.
And as far as intent, let's not forget that Jason Van Dyke, and he testified to it today, had never fired his gun at anybody during his 13 or 14 year career. He said today that he's very proud of that fact. So, they can't argue that this is a gun happy, free shooting cop before this night.
Correct.
And the prosecution brought up, and remember, during the direct examination, Judge Gaughan said, "I'm going to give you wide latitude on cross." And so he would have allowed a wide latitude on cross, but the prosecutor didn't need it, didn't do much on cross, actually.
All right, let's pick it up on the other side here. Ben, obviously all of this tonight, right?
Yeah. Yep, we'll have it for you at 4 o'clock today. Plus, just direct you over to the WGN-TV website where you can see this testimony for yourself. And it is powerful to hear it out of this Chicago police officer's own mouth.
Hmm. Thank you, Ben. Judy Pilak standing by. She's got WGN News in 2 minutes. This right here on 720 WGN and CLTV. Mm-hmm. All right, the action today in the courtroom in the Jason Van Dyke trial has come to a close tomorrow. There may be the defense may be resting tomorrow, and we anticipate that prosecution is going to do a rebuttal case. There could be a surrebuttal, according to Mike Monaco, who is with us, our legal analyst.
Mm-hmm.
And then the closing arguments. So it appears that this trial is going to be wrapped up either later this week or early next week. And one of the stranger things that happened here today in this courtroom, other than the fact that Jason Van Dyke took to the stand himself, very rare in a criminal case that a defendant gets up there. And you tell defendants, Mike, something very important.
I tell them normally, I don't care if they believe you. I just want the jury to like you.
Yeah. Do you think that was... accomplished?
I think it might have been. It's hard to tell. It's such a personal thing, and it's also something different being in the courtroom and seeing him testify. You've seen him there for the last 3 weeks. Now you see him take the stand.
Yeah.
And I think he was somewhat likable,
sympathetic. Yeah. All right. So then, earlier in the day, though, the judge locked up a reporter.
Crazy moment, really.
Right. So freelance.
Put him in cuffs.
Freelance reporter who has written for Slate. And for the New York Times Magazine and some other things. I mean, there's a lot of people in Chicago that are freelancers and stringers, as they used to call them, that work for other publications around the country. And they want to, the New York Times doesn't necessarily, or Slate or whomever it is, doesn't necessarily want to pay for somebody to be here. So they hire a reporter here. And he was sitting next to Jason Meiser from the Tribune, we are told. I hope I have that right. And Jason, you were there when all this happened. What exactly went down?
Well, I was sitting right next to him. I think he told me his name was Zach. He told me what he was doing there. We were chit-chatting before the trial started. And the defense had an expert on who was testifying about police psychology and use of force. And I noticed the sheriff's deputy come in and give us a look. I thought he was looking at me at first, but he was looking at the guy next to me. And I saw it perched up on the armrest of the bench. Mm-hmm. He had one of those digital recorders, and it was going, and I thought, oh no.
Oh, God. No. Oh, no.
Not mine! Not mine!
He may need a lawyer.
So, wait, it's obvious you're not supposed to do that, and he just had it out in full view?
Yeah, he wasn't trying to hide it, so he just didn't know for some reason, because they read this big, long decorum order before trial starts. Don't approach Jason Van Dyke. Don't record. If you're not a reporter, you're not allowed to use any electronic device. And it goes on for about 5 minutes. And then they'd start the trial. So after the deputy, he came over and he took this recorder, And then about 5 minutes later, the judge stopped the trial in the middle of a question and answer of this expert witness. And he excused the jury and called up the this reporter to the bench and asked him, was he recording? And he said he was.
He was already in handcuffs at that point, right? When he approached the bench?
I don't think he had been put, no, he had not been put in handcuffs yet.
Because we have a video up on CLTV of him with his hands behind his back addressing the judge, looking like, holy crap, what did I do?
Yeah, is it a little bit of, did they need to handcuff him? Was he struggling in some way, or were they just sending a message? What's your read on that, Jason?
No, I think that was just how they handle things. When a judge orders somebody taken into custody, that's what they do. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't taken into custody until the judge called me up, because I was sitting next to him, and he had asked this guy if he had heard the decorum order, and he initially said no. So the judge called me up and was going to ask me if he was sitting next to me when they read it, I was not happy about, because I don't want to throw this guy under the bus. But he fessed up to it right after that, and that's when he said direct contempt, take him into custody.
Oh, God.
Oh, geez.
He was handcuffed, by the way. I'm just watching the video play out. And he was fully handcuffed there. So they took him out. It was a $1,000 bond. They have to post $100, right, to get out. And it took about 30 reporters to come up with $100 for the guy. And
everybody pulled their money, right? Jason, did you witness that?
They did. They came up with the money. But then the question was, who's going to go bond them out? Because we were all there. Jason Van Dyke took the stand.
Who got time for that?
Our tweets and everything.
Sorry, Zach.
The deputies came down to the overflow room, and they asked who's available to go bond this guy out. And eventually somebody did go over. I'm not sure who did, but he's out now. And I'm told, I just saw a tweet from my colleague. He said, he told everybody he's fine and thanked them.
We're very concerned that it was bologna sandwiches over at on the other side of 26th Street. Hey, let's talk a little bit about your thought here on Jason Van Dyke taking the stand. Was there a moment that you thought was particularly compelling here, one way or the other?
I thought the cross examination got to some really key points where he's clearly refuting what's on the video. Whether he's saying he saw it, he saw McDonald raise the knife, he saw McDonald trying to get up, and that's why he kept firing. So there was this very tense back and forth where he was interrupting the prosecutor, she was hammering back at him, and it got pretty heated. So I thought the most telling moments were what the jury's going to have to sort out between what he's saying he saw. That's Van Dyke I'm talking about, and what's on the video.
Did he ever say why he shot 16 times?
His explanation there, I thought, was a little hazy. At one point, he said McDonald was trying to get up, and at one point, he said something we've never heard before, we've never seen in police reports, that he was aiming at the knife his hand, trying to knock it out of his hand with his bullets, which is against the special prosecutor pointed out immediately that's against their training. They're trained to shoot center mass, and so that was odd, I thought. Not sure how that played, but those were his explanations, and then on direct examination, I thought he did a pretty good job offering some explanation and why he why he did what he did.
Just one of the things I find when you watch these trials on television, a real live trial, not a TV trial or movie trial, and there's a very big difference, is that sometimes you fade off as you're watching it, and I imagine the jurors do too, depending on how long they've been listening to it, that you can kind of daydream and they have to catch back up with where they are. And it's hard to kind of maintain attention to this the entire time. Much more of a classroom atmosphere than it is a movie atmosphere or TV atmosphere where they punch a line so that you know what's going on. And there was a moment, especially in that part that you're just describing there, where the cross-examination is trying to go back over the protocol of, you're not trying to shoot the knife, you're trying to shoot the center mass. And I got a little lost in it, and then I realized by the time I was done coming out of the confusion about where they were going with it, I realized I was like, that doesn't doesn't really matter. Now I don't know what the experience of each and every juror in there was, but it's it's the compilation here of the groupthink of the jury at the end, because not everybody's going to have the same recollection of the exact same items and moments that they saw. And that's going to be, that, you know, that's what it really comes down to. Jason, thank you very much. Appreciate your time, sir. And thanks for not getting locked up. All right. Goodbye. At least it was a freelancer, not one of our guys.
Seriously.
Thank God it wasn't Eric.
Yeah.
Yes,
exactly.
He'd never do anything.
Well, Eric's going to join us here in just a second. Here's a little bit of what that sounded like.
All right. Were you recording testimony here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God.
You know that's a violation of the decorum order?
No, I didn't.
You didn't.
Okay.
Who was sitting next to you? Get that individual up there.
Oh, God.
Before I ask him if he was sitting next to you when the decorum order was read, I want you to think about your answer.
Oh, gee.
Did you see here my deputy read the decorum order in this courtroom?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for coming up. All right, take him into custody. I find you in direct contempt of court.
Oh, my God.
Bang, bang.
Ouch. They don't mess around, these judges?
Gone, dude, does not mess around. I'd like to say that Judge Gone has done an amazing job here. Yeah. And I love his new haircut, and he looks great.
Very fine-looking gentleman.
Very fine-looking man.
Really?
And an American hero, really.
Yeah, really? Another, just should wear a cape.
In case I'm ever in front of him. I don't like the speed by which he wants to throw a reporter in prison. Uh-huh. Or jail, or whatever's going to happen here. No, this could be a fine right there. All right, stand by. We'll come right back. We'll talk to Eric Rung and more analysis from Mike Monaco as we continue right here on WGN and CLTV. Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour news?
Two deadly shootings in Rogers Park are connected. You know him, you love him. Ro Khan joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow at 9:40 in the morning, talking about the latest in the Adam Levine and Pee Wee Herman year-long feud. Sometimes I'm not sure if you're prepared for what they tell me that you're going to talk about. So brush up on that.
Yeah,
okay?
I know. I study for these things when they bring them up. I learn it from you, what we're talking about tomorrow. So I just study.
Really?
And I get like, okay, yeah, Adam Levine. Yeah, Levine. Adam Levine is a lawyer. Adam Levine is the rock star.
Oh, got it. That's how you keep them straight.
I think Adam Levine was a Levine was actually a lawyer. I worked with Mike. All right, let's talk to Eric Rung, who was in the courtroom today in the Jason Van Dyke trial. And Eric, just set the scene here. As Jason Van Dyke was up on the stand, what was the mood like in the courtroom? And did you get a sense that people in the courtroom were feeling a sympathy for him, a distraction by him? What did you get from that?
Well, there had been whispers that he was going to be testifying for a while now. And then, of course, when he was called, I think it kind of took everybody by surprise. Everybody was kind of thinking that he would be the last witness if the defense did call him to the stand. So when he got up there, you could definitely see everybody kind of come to attention. The jury, everybody opened their notebooks waiting for that testimony. Some of McDonald's family that has been coming to the court hearings since the trial began, I looked back at them and you could see that they were becoming emotional because they knew what they were going to hear again, and this time they were going to hear it from Jason Van Dyke himself. At times, at the beginning of the testimony, before there was a short break, Laquan McDonald's mother and family had some tears in their eye. I also looked back at Van Dyke's wife, Tiffany, who was holding the hand of a friend who was sitting next to her, and the nun that has been coming with them from their family parish. She began saying the rosary.
I noticed that she was saying that during the right. I want to just make that point, and then we got to run. But I did notice that the nun was praying during the testimony of Jason Van Dyke. Was that audible in the courtroom?
I could hear it. I think it was just because I was in the, I was just sitting in a row ahead of her, maybe about three or four people down. I could hear it. I mean, it was more of a mumble. I grew up Catholic, so I knew what she was doing. So
yeah.
I put that together. She was doing the rosary.
Got it. Eric,
and
thank you very much.
You were not removed from the courtroom today, right?
You're not arrested?
I was not removed from the courtroom today.
Yeah, thank you. We're really glad you did not embarrass us, Eric. You're representing WGN, damn it. All right, thank you, sir.
Thanks, Eric.
We've got Judy Pilak standing by with the WGN News. Mike Monaco, attorney at law here in Chicago. No case too big or too small. Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks,
always.
Mike.
That's the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeFlantis right here on 720 WGN. Tom Skilling joins us, and he, of course, is always brought to us by PermaSeal basement systems. There couldn't be a more appropriate sponsorship than people who help you with a cracked foundation or, water seepage
so
in your
true.
Basement. I mean, this is a man. Last night, okay, I just want to tell you. Now, you warned us. You warned us what was happening. So I tucked myself into bed. I put on my jammies,
right? What time did you go to bed? Like, what do you think?
Here's what happened. What had happened was...
I always wonder when I hear that.
There were things I had to do last night. So I'm home. I make myself some dinner. I go downstairs. I'm watching. I like to watch Anderson cry, and then I like to watch Chris Cuomo sweat testosterone out of his eyeballs,
neck veins are what get right, out. Right, they bulge. Yeah.
Yes, or sometimes he just where he flexes and those pythons come, popping through his suit.
Yeah,
and then you just never know what you're going to get with Don Lemon. You just never know. And then and then on the other TV, because I had the two TVs going in the bar area, I was watching Monday Night Football because I wanted to see this Mahomes guy because he's something.
So he is something.
Kind of sort of a back and forth thing going. And then I realized, I'm feeling a little tired.
Yeah, talk of sensory overload.
Yes.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. It was just too much between the day and all that. So I go upstairs, I put on my pajamas, brush my teeth, I do the whole thing, and I put on my nightcap, that thing.
Yeah, with the long kind of stocking cap with the pom-pom on the end.
Exactly, with the bally dingle, I call it. And I get into bed, and I've got myself, and it's very Ebenezer Scrooge when I get into bed, like the dress. And then all of a sudden, I said, well, what am I going to turn on? And I turn on something on Netflix. And all of a sudden, it's like it was a deluge, and there was lightning, and it was scary. I mean, it was the wind; you could hear it howling. And that I there was a lightning strike. You know how you do that thing where you see the strike and then you count.
Right.
I didn't even get to one before it made the noise.
And
I'm like,
right,
oh my god, it's right here.
Yeah.
Is everybody okay? I'm going to hide under my bed.
And so, you know what's amazing about that row is if you went down to Joliet, they had a trace. There was like a tenth of an inch at Romeoville, and if you went a little south of there, nothing happened. So amounts picked up to over 2 inches up north.
I just want to tell you something.
Yeah.
I put my Thunder shirt on. I crawled. I got out of my pajamas, put my Thunder shirt on. I crawled into the hamper.
Does that work, by the way, for you?
For sure. The hamper makes me feel better because I get to smell myself in the hamper.
And it's an enclosed environment, so you can't see the lightning.
I talk about sensory overload. I'm hearing all kinds of stuff I just didn't need to hear.
I know.
Yeah,
right in there.
The little cap is the thing I can't get out of my mind.
I know that visual
with a little ball on the end of the thing.
Some things you just can't unsee, Tom, and that's one of them. I'm with you there.
I know.
It was a beautiful. I mean, the show, the light show in the sky last night. I was watching it with my daughter because the whole skyline was lit up with pink for breast cancer, and then you saw like the lightning and. Wow, it was something to behold.
It was.
Then it got a little scary because it was a tough storm.
And we were very lucky. That came in a couple hours beyond peak heating, which is the only thing that really differentiated last night's setup from what happened last week when we had all that wind damage. So we lucked out in that regard. And even the rains, I mean, as heavy as they were, I don't think there was terribly serious flooding across the area, none that we're aware of. And I'll tell you, this pattern unfolding, do you know in the next week there's going to be sticking snow up in the northern plains and the northern Rockies?
Oh, my God!
We could measure snow.
This affects me directly.
But on the other hand, we warm up.
When is that going to snow?
It's next week. During the week.
Okay, all right.
And there are a couple different systems. There's a big long wave trough developing, which really, when that happens, the jet dives down the California coast into northwest Mexico. Then it recurves into the Midwest from the south. That really warms us up.
So we're going to have it warm next week?
Yeah.
And then it's going to be snowing in the Rockies.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
This is going to be quite a week. And the snow out there could be measured in the feet in some of the higher elevations out in Montana and Wyoming, places like that. So, and that's what you expect to happen in October.
So let me ask you a question, because I know I get personal forecasts from Tom, and he really loves it, because, he doesn't want to give in to anybody asking for that, because it has to give in to everybody asking for that.
I can only imagine door that opens.
But I'm just going to ask, Denver on Saturday.
Okay, well, let me look
like
at this.
Denver,
you're going to be in Denver
I'm going to be in Boulder, Colorado just for Saturday.
Okay.
For the University of Colorado Buffaloes taking on the Arizona States.
Now, as I speak, I'm calling this up because,
I'm just going to check this out.
I want to be sure. This
I want to tell you a little story. I want to tell you a little story.
Precise for
this
you.
Is about Chicago broadcast royalty. This is what this is about.
Yeah.
Ryan Cheverini. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people know this from the ABC 7.
We one love Ryan.
Loveliest human beings you're ever going to meet.
He totally is.
Yep.
He and his brother were twins.
Is that right?
Yes. And they both played football. This just tells you a little something about genetics.
Yeah.
They both played football at the University of Colorado. And his brother went on to a career in the NFL and is now the offensive coordinator and assistant head coach at the University of Colorado.
How about that?
And they and Ryan goes out there to as many home games as he possibly can to go hang out with his brother. And he invited some friends along with him for this weekend. And I'm so excited to go see this because I've met his brother and his sister-in-law. His brother Darren is one of, and this is a guy who's going to be a major significant player in college football head coaching someday. He's going to be the kind of guy that they're going to be talking about, you know, in the next decade.
So he's coaching now, is that
he's
right?
He's coaching. He's the there was just a gigantic story one of the sports, I forget, it was Bleacher Report or something this week about him. And when you see, I've never seen, when you watch Colorado football on, you know, whether it's, you know, a primetime game or, you know, you watch it on a Saturday, they always focus on him. I've never seen the offensive coordinator focused on any other sport, but they
Very
do. So, there's some brand building and, like, there's a star being born here. And so I want to go out there and say that it's like going out and meeting Nick Saban and being able to tell your grandkids, you know, I went to a game with Nick Saban back in
2002.
Right?
Well, that's
or
very
Urban Meyer,
cool.
Or something like that. Yeah.
When are you going out there?
Saturday.
I'm
going just for the day on Saturday.
Gotcha. Okay, now I'm looking at this now.
Yeah.
And look, it looks quite mild, to tell you the truth.
Oh, good.
So I think you're in good shape.
Good.
You're,
yeah, the, great to
the,
hear.
The bottom drops out during the week. But not to...
Oh, God, don't scare me with other details. I just need to know. I can only concentrate on one fear at a time.
Now that we got the Denver forecast out of the way, we also have people interested in the local forecast, which would involve the marathoners, you know?
Well, you know what?
That's an excellent point, Anna.
It is a good point. And I'll tell you...
Like those thousands of people, those people
is
might
it
be
the one person I'm trying to get an actual... Yeah, I get it. Okay.
We're talking, I think, for the marathon, we'll probably see... we'll wake up to a 62 and see a high of only 68. It'll be clouding
That's
over.
Good,
there could
right?
be some rain coming in later in the marathon during the morning hours. And a east to southeast wind blowing it off the water.
But that's like pretty good.
Yeah, I think the marathoners, runners will like that. The marathoners.
Yeah.
So that's
good. A pretty good forecast for them. So they.
And what's
good.
Interesting, if they waited just a day, that we'd be up in the 80s. It actually would probably be too warm.
Yeah.
So
I remember that year. What was that like? About a decade ago.
Remember that? We were close to 90, and there were people literally dropping out. It was so bad. No, it won't be anything like that. Should be good. There may be a little rain developing as the morning goes on, but we're talking about a pretty good, I think most marathoners would be happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then next week we go back into the 80s around here again on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Unusually warm. In fact, temperatures will be running. Well, Monday, it looks like Tuesday will average about 19 degrees above normal the full day, and about 10 above normal on Monday. And even Sunday will be 9 above normal because the 62 with which we start the day is actually above normal. So, but it just won't warm up much, that's all, during the day.
Tom, we all good for Cubs tonight?
Yeah.
Everything fine?
Oh,
clear?
Yeah. No problems there.
No? In terms of... This
in terms
is,
of the weather.
This is in terms of ascending priority, by the way, I should point out.
Yeah, really?
Because it's like, I'm worried about like 2 hours in Boulder, Colorado. And,
on Saturday.
Which affects only one human being in the entire... Two human beings in the entire Chicago metropolitan area. And then we got the marathoners, right? That's thousands, right, of people who are interested in that.
Tensely,
and then, and then, you know...
Millions who are interested in
what happens in tonight's game. So that's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kev.
Thanks for bringing it up, Kevin. Very
now,
relevant.
Anna, you need anything?
About we're
Violetta?
In ascending. Are we in descending order?
Or we're in ascending order.
Ascending order. Yeah. What's the most? So I don't have anything more important
more pressing
than we've
than
already mentioned.
What about the South Korean boy band at the United Center?
Oh, when is that?
Is it going to rain there? That's tonight.
Well, you know, you don't worry about it, Violetta, because it's inside.
That's true, but people are going to be on their way there.
I see. No, no problem.
No. I think we should just leave it with
less
they're
people
going
are interested
to be
in
inside.
That than the Colorado Buffalo game.
Did you?
That was a grand, we went the other way. It was zero people.
Did you guys know seriously that the South Korean boy band was coming into town?
No,
I did not.
Well, this K-pop is huge, but is it huge in Chicago? I mean, it must be, right? If they sold out the United Center.
See, the things I learn on this show.
What is the name of this K-pop band?
BTS.
Can we get a Bri? Can we get a little bit of BTS music here?
BTS.
Who was that?
BTS, the Korean K-pop band.
Who was that Korean guy that did the dance?
Took
off on YouTube a couple years ago.
I think that was from American Idol.
Psy. His name was Psy.
Gangnam Style, remember?
Yeah.
That's the dance thing.
Yes.
That song was wild.
I had to play him on television.
Is that right?
I did for Halloween on Windy City Live. I did have the hair. And then we put something up on Windy City Live, and he on Instagram, and he liked it on Instagram.
What a compliment.
And I was like, oh, my God.
Hey.
What was happening to your career that you would actually like that?
Well, you know what, Ro? This is great. If this radio gig ever goes south, you got another one to fall back on.
I could be a
side
tribute band.
That's
only once. I have to do that thing where I pretend I'm on a horse.
I don't think you have to worry, by the way, about the gig going south. But it's nice to have a backup. I'm not sure what I would do.
Let's hear what the Korean pop music sounds like. Yeah. Hold on. Here we go. I hope they're really staring at us. We just don't know.
I like this.
Hold on. Tom, just wait for the drop here. Hold on.
Yes.
We're going to. This is in Korean, right?
I think these guys are great.
They're saying making love, right?
I'm so
fake love or fake love. Oh, it's in English.
Yeah, totally English.
Wow. Remember Kyo Sakamoto with Sukiyaki?
No.
I'm sorry, what?
No.
That was back in the 1960s. That was actually played at all the rock stations. And I never could figure out how that song made it onto the Billboard top, whatever it had to make it onto.
Was it all in Japanese?
Yeah, it was all Japanese.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are you sure they just weren't speaking English and we couldn't understand?
No, you definitely knew it wasn't. And you know, they had everybody here in the Americas speaking Japanese or singing to this song.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a big
And that
hit.
Was only 20 years after we dropped the bomb. So, I mean, just think about that for a second. How quickly we get over this stuff.
I know.
All right. All right. Now, I just want to review. I want to recap.
Okay. Yes.
In terms of importance, we're going to get the Cub game in tonight.
No problems.
It looks like a more comfortable weather situation for Sunday for the runners.
I mean,
you know, it's
might rain
cloudy
a little, but they would probably like
I think
that
rain
too.
Is kind of nice.
Yeah,
cloudy and in the 60s, probably good, right?
Yeah.
I think they prefer 50s though, don't they? Really?
I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
It's probably a little warmer they'd like, and it's going to be humid. So you know, when you're running, you don't like that. But I mean, it's cool humid.
And then I'm going to have no problem in Boulder, Colorado, on Saturday night.
Thank God.
No, there's a pretty nice storm wrapping up, but you're on the warm side of it. So,
okay, good. All right.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
Well, that sounds like an interesting trip. I've been getting the most beautiful photos from folks who have been out in Colorado. The fall colors are out.
Oh, really?
Up in the mountains. It is gorgeous. You know, they got the birch out there and the alder trees and all, and it really is quite a scene.
Yeah. Mm. I like when our alder men change colors in the fall. They go from pasty white to beet red.
I see.
Yeah, so it goes on.
Who'd have thought?
I was on a street in Chicago where all the fall leaves had changed dramatically, and then other streets they hadn't, and I talked to the neighbors. I said, well, what's going on? It's such beautiful display of fall colors. And they said that Chicago Fire had been shooting on this particular street.
Hey, they were shooting up on Broadway, today.
Oh, they were.
Yeah.
You see them all over town, but you just didn't know in this case because they were gone already, but all the bottoms of the trees where they were shooting was supposed to look like fall, so they colored them all.
Isn't that something?
And they looked beautiful, and I just thought, what trees are those?
Yeah, is that so nice?
I had a guy who ran, a friend, who was in Milwaukee radio, and I worked up there, but he would grind up the ice cubes, you know, these big blocks of ice to make snow so that they could, you know.
Make fake snow for
fake snow
TV
for movie
and movies
scenes.
And stuff like
yeah.
That. Yeah. Yeah, that's what you need. That's, I like when they do that in Florida. And then everybody goes, oh, wow.
They do it in Texas, too, for their parties.
Yeah, great. Oh, I don't know what that is.
Snow party.
Yeah, you live in it and tell me how much you like it.
Try
all right, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Guys, you, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, sir.
I'll talk to you before you go, so we'll give you an update.
Thank you very much as we get closer to the most important
forecast.
Denver forecast coming our way.
Not even Denver, Boulder. It's even more specific.
Right.
Listen, during the 4 to 6 p.m. hours. Oh, no, the 4 and 6? Wait, hold on. Are we doing, we're doing two of these a day today? That's what you're telling me, right? Two of these. I got two pairs. One this hour, one in the 6 o'clock hour. A pair of tickets to the Super Suite for the Blackhawks home opener on Sunday against the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're not going to want to miss that. Stay tuned. Tickets go on sale at ChicagoBlackhawks.com, by the way, in case you're interested in that as well. Right now, Judy, what's coming up in a few minutes in the newsroom?
Getting down to the wire in the Jason Van Dyke murder trial.
It has not been easy for me. And, you know, I started off in Brooklyn. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million. I came into Manhattan, and I had to pay him back, and I had to pay him back with interest.
It turns out that might not be 100% true.
Although $1 million then is a lot of money. Still is a lot of money.
Yeah,
it might be even more than that, what we're suggesting.
Can you just, is there a way possible to play that cut separately here? Yeah, can I hear that one more time?
It has not been easy for me. And, you know, I started off in Brooklyn. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million. I came into Manhattan, and I had to pay him back, and I had to pay him back with interest.
Turns out that's not accurate.
You mean the paying back part with interest part?
Kind of. Anyway, he started with a loan. Fred Trump, his father's tax records have just been released.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how that has happened. I don't know the answer to this. But
the New York Times has done an analysis. I don't know if they somehow obtained them.
Well, they must have. Turns out,
if somebody else did and they were building on that report. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Right. It turns out that Donald Trump was a millionaire by the time he was 8 years old. 8 years old. And what is he, 72 right now? Is that right? So he was born in 1946. So by 1954, he was a millionaire. $1 million in 1954 was a significant amount of money. He was getting an income of $200,000 a year as an infant.
3 years old, $200,000 a year.
Yeah. So, and I get it. Listen. He can't help who he was born to, right? He can't help the fact that his family was very successful and that, you know, they were real estate barons and queens and they were doing their own. And Baron, is that a funny name there? Because it turns out that's like the whole thing for him. He was John Baron when he was faking to be his own publicist and he's named his son Baron. So the idea of the baronness is it's a big one for him. And it's not his fault. I get it. But at the same time, by going, you know, it was really hard for me. I had to pull myself up on my bootstraps.
That part's a little hard to believe, given even the $1 million loan scenario. But this New York Times article digs into his father's, they have financial records and tax returns and all kinds of things. And they really set up a picture that was very different than that.
It also says in the New York Times story here, this is the headline of it, essentially, is President Trump participated in dubious tax schemes during the 1990s, including instances of outright fraud that greatly increased his fortune. Mr. Trump won the presidency, proclaiming himself to be a self-made billionaire. But a New York Times investigation, based on a vast trove of confidential tax returns and financial records, reveals that Mr. Trump received the equivalent today of at least $413 million from his father's estate.
You're saying that the parents, Fred and Mary Trump, transferred over $1 billion in wealth to their kids, which normally would have produced a tax bill of $500 million, they estimate, but instead they paid $52 million, or about 5% tax records show.
Oh, boy.
And somehow dodge the inheritance.
And yes. Tax. Well, he got rid of the inheritance tax, right? Didn't he? Well, he tried
to. Why.
He tried to, and they took it up to $10 million, which, you know, still wouldn't. Still back in this, and this was in the 1990s, they said. When did this actually, this part actually occur?
This billion-dollar gift.
Yeah, this billion-dollar gift. I think it was even earlier than that, maybe the 80s. There was, even that, he would not have gotten covered under that. He had to pay $52 million as opposed to, but now $10 million of that would have been possible to shelter, mm-hmm. which is nice. That's mm-hmm. very nice. The president's brother, Robert Trump. Did we know about Robert Trump?
We don't hear too much about Robert.
I've never heard anything about his sister,
who's the judge.
Right. You know what? I like Robert Trump's style. Yeah. We've never heard of him
the
before.
Smartest Trump.
How about that? Our dear father, Fred C. Trump, passed away in June 1999. This is a statement on behalf of the Trump family. Our beloved mother, Marianne, passed away in 2000. All appropriate gift and estate tax returns were filed and the required taxes paid. Our father's estate was closed in 2001 by both the IRS and New York State tax authorities, and our mother's estate in 2004. Our family has no other comment on these matters that happened more than 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And would appreciate your respecting the privacy of our deceased parents. Don't bring your dead parents into this. That has nothing to do with it. We understand that they're deceased. This is really about whether or not everybody avoided the tax complications.
And it seems like they certainly did, the answer to that. Robert Trump is the oldest of the five. And he apparently
Why have we never heard of him before?
Well, he's in town and country for his big high-profile divorce from socialite Blaine Trump. But since then, he has not courted the spotlight at all and lays low.
Does he have anything to do with the Trump empire as it exists today?
I'm sorry, he's the youngest sibling, not the oldest, the youngest of the five.
Does he have anything to do, is he part of the Trump real estate
and wine
fortune?
He did, he
joined
the family business and was the top executive, it says, with the company. But
we never saw him on The Apprentice. How do we know?
You would have thought he would have been one point filling in for one of the advisors to Trump, but no, he did not. It's not his thing.
I tell you, by the time he was three, I just want to read this as it appears in the New York Times. By age three, Mr. Trump was earning $200,000 a year.
Today's dollars.
He was a millionaire by the age of eight. And by the time he was 17, his father had given him part ownership in a 52-unit apartment building. Since he graduated from college, he was receiving the equivalent of $1 million a year from his father. The money increased with years to more than $5 million annually. By the time he's in his 40s and 50s. How about that?
No wonder he's so confident.
Yeah. Who's ever said... that's part of the issue here. If you're worth 200 grand when you're three, you're pushing people around on the play lot. Because, you know, I mean, that just is. That goes to that whole idea of, he was really tough to other kids on the play lot. Yeah, I can see why now.
Yeah.
I got 200 grand. What do you got?
Right. Way to earn it.
Yeah.
Millionaire by age eight, and says that he gave him part ownership. Did you see this?
Yes, we just said that.
Okay, yeah. but then he says that he was receiving the equivalent of $1 million a year, and then it increased over the years to more than $5 million annually in his 40s and 50s.
Right.
So it's that's a chunk of change he's been given.
Must be nice.
I know, everybody says that. Must be nice. And it is. I'm sure it is. I just don't want to hear him telling me how poor he was. This was so tough. I had bone spurs and I had to get $1 million loan from my dad. My dad was tough.
Well, he's taken it and he's made it into even something bigger. But yeah, you're right. That part is hard to stomach when you hear him saying it's tough.
This is the definition of started on third base.
Yes, it is. That's what I always say.
Actually, this is not just a definition of he started. Here's a guy that thinks he hit a home run when he started on third base, or whatever that expression
right.
is. He not only started on third base, there was a passed ball, wild pitch. He was already halfway down the third base line when the whole thing started.
And the bases were loaded.
And he was able to just walk across the line. And the catcher tripped on the way to go get the ball. Yeah. Fell on the ball. Rolled over the ball, It took almost an hour for the catcher to get to the ball, and the pitcher didn't cover home plate. That is what I'm telling you here about how, well, he did not really hit a home run.
It sounds really hard.
It was, yes, not so hard.
I think that other tidbit in there is important, too, that they use the tax loss to their advantages. And I don't know, maybe that's what he would suggest is a good way of doing it now. Today, many people feel that the inheritance taxes is something that should be looked at.
Here's a great moment, though, in this story. Much of his giving was structured to sidestep gift and inheritance taxes using methods tax experts describe as improper or possibly illegal. But here's the thing. Fred Trump became wealthy with the help of federal housing subsidies,
mm-hmm.
right? He used Section 8 on these buildings to get loans, mm-hmm. you know, low interest loans and be able to, you know, build these things. And then eventually he started redlining people out of the buildings, which is really something. He insisted that it was manifestly, Fred Trump insisted it was manifestly unfair for the government to tax his fortune as it was passed to his children. Even though the government was the one that actually financed his fortune. Now,
certainly helped.
I get, you hear this from a lot of very wealthy families, that the inheritance tax, the death tax, as it's called, is unfair because it you know, they earn the money and they want to be able to pass it along.
They tax
to their
it twice,
kids.
Is what they're saying. Yes. So we pay for it when we earn it, and then you pay for it again when you pass it along to your kids.
It seems that they paid for it neither time here.
It doesn't seem there's a lot of paying in this
kind of the sense that I get about this. But that is the argument. That's the argument, and you know you hear that. Yeah, I mean, you heard Donald Trump on the campaign trail talk about that, about how he wanted to get rid of the death tax, and it was unfair. He made that exact argument that at Mar-a-Lago, all the people at Mar-a-Lago argue, except for that one no-good son that they don't want to leave the money to, because he's just going to do something bad with it, like run for president. Oh, man. All right.
It is a fascinating look, though. I mean, it's not something. This is the most comprehensive look at the what he inherited and what his family's financial situation was. Imagine that this many years later.
And has he responded?
Yeah, his attorneys are saying they don't infer that you did anything that they did anything illegal, or they followed tax laws and had, you know, professionals handling all of this. So everything was done by the books.
The largest payday, this is an interesting little side note here in the story as well, the largest payday he ever got from his father came long after Fred Trump passed away. It happened quietly in May of 2004 when Trump and his siblings sold off the empire that his father had built in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
It had spent 70 years, the father had, assembling this dream.
Yeah.
That he hoped would never leave his family, but that didn't take, but the Donald sold it off anyway, and he got $177 million for it.
Wow.
Or in today's dollars, about $236 million.
$250 million.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice little payday.
So it was.
I don't know that we ever doubted that, though, did we? I mean, it just sort of, it was the way he portrayed it that was sort of counter to the facts.
I mean, I'm not holding him, you know, I mean, people go, oh, are you jealous? Of course I'm jealous. You're jealous, too. Everybody's jealous when you listen to this. That's not the issue. The issue is that he tried to make it like, you know, the tough, hardscrabble childhood, you know, growing up. These people, oh, my God, I could barely scratch $200,000 together.
When I was three.
Right? So he's been pushing people around his whole life, I think is what we just learned there. I think it's the most important thing. And if you wonder why he acts like he does, think that just basically explains it. That's all. All right, Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
Well, we'll have more on the poor little rich boy.
here's me. Conjo with Anna DeFlantes.
Yes.
Right here on 720
indeed.
WGN.
Hard to believe it's going to be so warm tomorrow.
It is. Well, we're in a moment here.
So warm.
So Tom Skilling told us. We're in a moment.
We are.
So we'll just have to see. It's going to be nice for the marathon. Mm-hmm. 60s for the marathon.
A little bit of rain potential.
Right.
But nothing big.
No big deal tonight. no big deal.
For K-pop in the United Center?
No, no. Oh. No, no. As Violetta asked, yeah, no, that's a different situation. for the Cubs game tonight, which obviously is, you know, the top of mind awareness, top of mind. Scared.
Yeah,
I don't know what to do with it.
Nerve-wracking, yes. Isn't it? That they're here.
It's crazy-making is what it is. It
can make you crazy.
Yeah. And so we've got that. And then in the 6 o'clock hour, I got another chance for you to rip us off for a super suite. A pair of tickets to a catered super suite for the Hawks home opener.
Sweet.
Hockey is back. And it's going to be a very fun season at the United Center. It's always great.
It is always great.
This is even in years where it's been a little softer than others, it is a great way to spend an evening, especially when it's really awful outside and it's so bright and cheerful inside. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. People are,
the energy.
Hockey fans are
awesome.
Hockey fans. And this year, I think it's going to be a pretty good year for them. So we shall see. So that's coming up. Let's get to the top five. But
was that one of your salsa moves, Rob? From earlier?
Oh, God.
If anyone needs to see some real salsa moves and laugh a little bit, you might want to call up the Windy City Live salsa.
Yeah, I heard you were salsa dancing today.
Pretty hilarious.
Someone tweeted at me. They go, can't wait to see what Ro says about salsa dancing.
Anyway, we'll just put that out there into the ether, see if anybody wants to.
And I hear
check
you
that
had
out
two ladies to dance with, not just one.
Yeah, he was smooth, too. You should have seen it. Check it out.
Yeah.
It's out there.
Thank you.
No problem.
Okay.
And you came in with guyliner today too, but that's all I'll say about that whole thing.
Yeah. Well, they made me like totally Ramon. But Ramon from The Proposal, not Ramon from
Ramones?
From Along Came Polly.
Oh.
Remember there was a guy from Along Came Polly who was super sexy?
Mm-hmm.
Ben Stiller was absolutely convinced that Jennifer Aniston was having an affair with this guy. No, this is the Ramon from I looked a lot like, remember the guy from The Proposal who, was the stripper?
Oh, gee.
And the officiant at the wedding and all that? Do I know too much about that? Do I watch too much Wii TV? Is that my problem? Can I get on with the top five?
Let's go.
Five?
We'll never
it's
make it.
The top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
I don't know if I want to get out with it. I'm scared.
Come on, Ro. We're running out of time. We've got a lot to get to.
Okay.
Number five.
Jason Van Dyke took the witness stand in his own defense today, testifying in a sometimes shaky voice and sometimes through tears that he had no choice but to shoot Laquan McDonald.
And did he keep advancing toward you?
He never stopped.
How close did he get to you?
He got probably about 10 to 15 feet away from me.
And when he got 10 to 15 feet away from you, what did he do?
We never lost eye contact. Eyes were bugging out. His face was just expressionless. And he turned his torso towards me.
And what did he do with his arm?
He waved the knife from his lower right side upwards, across his body, towards my left shoulder.
And when he did that, what did you do, officer?
I shot him.
Van Dyke also testified they did not have enough time to get out of Laquan McDonald's path.
Well, you actually went to the end of your squad car, right?
I know that now, yes.
Could have went back around to the squad car, so the car was between you and Laquan, correct?
There was no time for that.
Well, you had 6 seconds before you pulled the trigger the first time, right?
And in that 6 seconds, he got a lot closer to me than I ever could have gotten away from him around the squad car.
And you got a lot closer to him, too, didn't you?
I know that now, yeah. Not intentionally.
Pardon?
Not intentionally.
Not intentionally?
Well, I thought I was backpedaling that night.
What?
Miss, I thought I was backpedaling that night.
You thought you were backpedaling as you're firing shot after shot after shot?
What I know now and what I thought at that time are two different things.
What this came down to was in his initial explanation to the officers on the scene, to the bosses who showed up on the scene, was that he was backing up in a way from Laquan McDonald as he was advancing, and the whole time telling him, drop the knife, drop the knife, drop the knife. The video shows that he got out of his car and he went around the side of his car toward Laquan McDonald.
Right.
Now, and then they were closing on each other, essentially. But Laquan McDonald is moving fairly quickly, and you can see in the video in real time
right.
that he's moving. He's almost skipping toward him, right?
He gets within 15 feet within seconds.
Right, from 36 feet to 13 feet within just 4 seconds. So it's like it's a pretty significant, you know, this is a fast-paced moment. But what you hear here is this idea, he's being questioned by the prosecutors here as to why was he advancing toward the threat. But isn't that the job of a police officer?
She was saying with a knife, the point your training might say you could get behind a squad car or get behind the door of a squad car in order to shield yourself between it. She was trying to make this point that a taser was on the way, and he's trying to say there was no time that this was,
yeah, well, what does that mean on the way? It wasn't there at the time, right? And it did arrive, what, like a minute or so afterwards, or 2 minutes afterwards? But, I mean, a minute in the period of time that was going on, you know, in that period of time, a minute was a minute, you know, that's another block away. So, I mean, it was compelling. To me, it was compelling.
It was compelling to hear from him. I think that was, it was something maybe the jury wanted to hear from him, and you heard it today. Imagine if this were a bench trial and you never heard from him, how people would perceive the results of this trial.
Right. I think that may be the reason they put him on.
Good for the city.
There was a wacky thing that happened in the courtroom, though, that had nothing to do with the death of Laquan McDonald.
Oh, boy.
And we'll play that for you at number one. Stay tuned for that. Oh, it's a reporter. It's a reporter getting locked up, put in handcuffs.
Not a pretty moment.
Oh, it was good. Yeah. Oh, it was not good. All right. Checking in at
number four.
Hillary Clinton did not mince words during the Atlantic Festival in Washington, D.C. today, calling out the president's rhetoric as bigoted and discriminatory. Speaking to the editor-in-chief, Jeffrey Goldberg, Clinton slammed Trump for his actions.
Do you think he's a racist?
I think he has thrown his lot in with many people and groups whose stated objective is white nationalism, white supremacy. I mean, how could you explain what he did and why after Charlottesville? I mean, we need a president at moments like that, regardless of party. And we saw it. Remember what George W. Bush did after 9/11.
He's right about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we get it. Donald Trump is not that kind of a guy. He's not an empathy guy. He's purely political when it comes to that. He appeals to his base. He doesn't want to tick off his base. He knows. He's instinctive in his understanding of angry people in America, of people who don't like other people. He understands xenophobia. He understands how to communicate to those people. And even though the people, you know, the Washington, you know, the regulars in Washington and people from polite society from coast to coast look at him and go, oh, how can he do that? And I'm talking about mostly Republicans here. Right? Democrats go, you know, they get out of their minds about it. But Republicans from polite, effete Republican enclaves like Kenny Bunkport, Maine, look back on Donald Trump and go, you know, what a heathen. Well, who would do something like that? But he does. But I don't think it's, I don't know, I do I want to hear more from Hillary?
What he's doing is broader even than that, because he has been racist, he's been sexist, he's been Islamophobic, he has been anti-LGBTQ. I mean, there's a long list. I don't think it's useful to say, oh, we figured it out, this is what he is. He has a view of America that is incredibly constricted.
Okay. Okay. That's all true. And you still lost to him. Right? You lost to a guy who
is all those things.
A dog catcher could have beaten. I'm just telling you that. I mean, all of those things are true. But the majority of people who voted for half the people who voted for Donald Trump. That's half. Let's just call it half. I think it's more, but half the people who voted for Donald Trump voted because they didn't want to vote for you. You know why? For a lot of reasons. But most importantly, you gave up on talking to the working class Americans who watch their lives disappear, who watch their towns disappear, and they've been watching it for decades and decades and decades and decades, and your husband promised them a better life, and their life didn't get better. And then you're up there, and you're refusing to go to Wisconsin and Michigan and all those places because you're afraid those people are going to yell at you. And you lost to a guy who you just described as unelectable. Whose fault is it? Don't get me started. All right, I've already started. Judy, what do you have at the bottom of the hour?
We have reaction to Jason Van Dyke's testimony today.
Okay. Feel it. All right. Top five continues. We're up to
number three.
Today is the first anniversary of the death of Tom Petty. He died at the age of 66 from an accidental overdose of pain medication. Back in 2014, he was honored by the performing rights organization ASCAP with the Founders Award for songwriting. Something indescribable about his talent, because he writes these earwormish hooks.
Stand the test of time. I mean, really.
Good storytelling.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, I mean, you go to a Tom Petty, if you had the pleasure of seeing Tom Petty live, you would say, even if you were not a gigantic Tom Petty fan, you'd go, I know every song. Mm-hmm. You could sing along with every song. But on the red carpet for that ASCAP award, he was asked, what specifically is it all about?
I wish I could tell you better, but it's so mystical, it really is, that probably better not to look at it too hard, I think, you know. Magic is a trick, but this is truly magic, because there's no trick involved, and it's, there it is.
Yeah. That's probably,
I understood that.
I think I totally understand it.
Really?
He has no idea. It just comes flowing out of him, and it's not a conscious decision. I think that's what we learned about Tom Petty, an amazing artist, dead 1 year ago today.
Number two.
Oh boy, Kenan Thompson says he's never seen anything like what went down on Saturday Night Live on Saturday with Kanye West. He sat down with Seth Meyers last night.
You know, we're all entitled to our opinions.
Sure.
I don't know if that's the moment necessarily to hold people hostage like that, but hey.
And so then when you saw what happened, were you so happy with the choice you'd made?
For sure. Yeah. As soon as he said, hey, join me up on stage, everybody, I was like, oh, there goes the little cheese in the mousetrap. And like, it's going down. Yeah, yeah, we're fair. We're in a service business. You know what I mean? Yeah. We try to cater to the hosts, make sure they have a good show and whatnot, and then, you know, when musical guests come in and they're a little bit crazy, maybe they're a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
We let them have that.
Yeah.
I mean, but we don't judge. We're not
absolutely
there to judge.
So he did. He walked up. So he invited everybody to be on stage, and he realized there was going to be a song. And he didn't want to stand up there on the stage while he sang the song, and then all of a sudden this rant started.
Yeah.
And Kenan was like, I'm out of here. So he went backstage, stood there watching it on the monitors and thinking, like everybody did, like, oh my God, what is he doing? And we didn't, until now, the YouTube videos, and now we were able to see what he did, didn't make air because he was doing it before they came back from the commercial break, and then after.
It was after the credits rolled, the cameras had stopped, then he decided to give his hostage-taking speech.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me drink.
Okay. All right. Okay. And finally,
number one.
Back to this moment in the Jason Van Dyke trial today. The judge, Vincent Gaughan, arrested a reporter in the middle of the hearings today.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. The judge abruptly sent the jury out of the room in the middle of a cross-examination and called Zachary Siegel up in front of him, who was at that point in handcuffs.
Poor guy.
Because he was recording electronically the testimony, which you're not supposed to do. They tell you that right before everything starts, there's a protocol speech.
Right. It was contempt of court for recording the proceedings, and all the reporters were briefed.
All right. Were you recording testimony here?
Yeah.
Okay. You know that's a violation of the decorum order?
No, I didn't know that.
You didn't know. Who was sitting next to you? Get that individual up here. before I ask him if he was sitting next to you when the decorum order was read, I want you to think about your answer, all right? Did you see here my deputy read the decorum order in this courtroom?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for coming up. All right, take him into custody. I find you in direct contempt of court.
Took him off in handcuffs.
Yeah. Yeah, right in handcuffs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They had a slapped him with $1,000 bail and bonded out for $100.
You think work pays for that?
I don't think so. Not against he's a freelancer. So that's probably not going to go well.
Would you guys pay for me?
Nope.
The top five at five.
It has not been easy for me. And, you know, I started off in Brooklyn. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million. I came into Manhattan and I had to pay him back, and I had to pay him back with interest.
$1 million loan. Nobody makes it on their own without $1 million loan. You reap what you sow.
Yeah. That's Def Camp for Cutie.
I didn't know they had a song about that.
Yeah, that's not about Trump, but it's no. but it works nicely. That is about Trump?
Oh. Seems like the exact narrative he tells about the $1 million loan from his dad that he had to pay back with interest.
That's a story you hear about, though, so much that it could be easily confused.
But this $1 million loan of which the president spoke turns out not to be accurate.
He actually received about $400 million from his father's empire.
Yeah. And he was worth... Aaron Kucherski is going to join us. He's been covering this for ABC News today. This is a New York Times story. New York Times analysis of the tax returns that involve Fred Trump, his father, right? Who passed away in 1999. And Aaron, you all right?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm okay. Good. I was riveted by your account.
Okay, good. There was something. It sounded like you were being taken hostage there. All right, we're good. This, it seems to me that the story that Donald Trump tells about the starting his business with $1 million loan from his dad, according to these documents that have now been analyzed by the New York Times, is inaccurate. Would you say that's true?
Well, that's what the Times findings suggest that. Well, I mean, they call it a series of dubious schemes and outright fraud. And it suggests that Trump ended up getting far more than $1 million from his father and in fact, helped his father hide money from the IRS. And the president and his siblings ended up being transferred maybe $500 million or $1 billion in today's dollars and ended up paying just a fraction of the taxes that would have been owed of a transaction that large.
Now he's saying that the Trump White House is pushing back, or his personal spokespeople are saying that this is all done legitimately through tax professionals, and there were no laws evaded, nothing to see here.
Yeah, and that's what Charles Harder says. He calls the story highly defamatory. And that's not a surprise. That's how the Trump folks typically respond to stories, you know, like that historically. But I think, you know, this harkens back to the president's time as a real estate developer. And, you know, when you shine a White House type spotlight on his finances, things look a little different than the narrative that he often deployed in the press. And his, you know, tales of fortune and bankruptcy and his personal ups and downs have been well chronicled here in New York in the tabloids over the years. But this does, I think, as you say, get at the heart of a narrative that the president liked to tell, especially on the campaign trail when he repeatedly talked about, he called it a small loan of $1 million from his father. He took that to Brooklyn, ended up in Manhattan, and built his real estate empire. And this just shows a different origin type story.
Well, part of it, though, is accurate. His dad didn't die until 1999. And Donald had already been on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous about 30 times by then. And he was starting to build in Manhattan. I think what he refers to in that, what Donald Trump refers to as that $1 million loan, was that he did get seated in his first, I think he bought an office building in New York first. And
that's
then,
right.
Of course, he went on to to a number of other pieces of property, including the Plaza Hotel, which ended up being a disaster for him and almost bankrupted his company. And then he had, because he was buying other things along the way, because he was using, you know, I mean, he's getting loans, right? He was leveraging all the other, the entire Trump portfolio to build an airline, and he wanted a cruise line, he wanted USFL. All those things were happening around that period of time when his father left this mortal coil, and then his mom a year later, right? And I'm sure that was not easier for the family, but it did infuse them with cash after there had been a really, really, really bad series of decisions that were made. And so, you know, it's the real story of what happened there, not the story that he likes to tell, but the story that the New York Times has been chronicling since way before he ever thought he was going to be president of the United States.
Sure.
You know, is a fascinating one.
It's not only is it fascinating, but I think, I don't want to say it's typical, because it's not typical, but I don't know that it's out of line with what you might expect of a New York City real estate developer or any big city
right.
real
I don't,
estate developer.
Right. I don't think it is. I agree with you, but I also think that these are the kinds of dodges that people attempt to use. I just, the problem a lot of people have, and that I think America should at some point stop and think about is, you know, his populism doesn't match his personal story. So his populism comes from one of two things. It either comes from knowing that he's got a political advantage to it, and that he's doing it even though he doesn't really believe in it and has never lived it. And it's just, you know, it's just good for him and in his career. And that's kind of scary.
Well, I think he's found it clearly politically expedient. But, you know, he did not grow up like the vast number of Americans. And I think his, you know, in his fortune, he has often, I think, admitted this much, has taken advantage of bankruptcy laws and tax shields. What was, I think, the richest of all was that when the story dropped, he was on stage in Pennsylvania, you know, touting the tax reform that he instituted. And you know, you get the sense that he may not have been paying very much himself in the way of taxes. But
well, now it's more in line with his tax-paying history, is that if he could reduce the taxes, that would be good. I mean, I guess, you know, you could argue that he's consistent on that. Americans pay too much taxes. It's too much. All right, well, that's fine. But does the U.S. government pay too much money, spend too much money? And is this government spending too much money? I mean, it's the kind of story that only now in America's political moment of faith politics, and I don't mean that in terms of God, I mean that in terms of people who just have faith in brands. They have a faith in the brand of Trump, or they have a faith in the brand of Democrats, or they have a faith in the brand of Bernie, or whatever it is. They don't, and so any kind of irony or hypocrisy that comes from any of those things, they just discount. It's, as long as they get what they want out of it, American voters, Americans, period, mm-hmm. the fans of these things, as long as they get what they want out of it, they don't care what the foibles
but
are.
But that's particularly true of President Trump. I don't know that that's necessarily true of someone who may espouse similar things but doesn't have the celebrity attached to his biography and resume. And I think that there's a unique, you know, American tolerance and I don't know, acceptance of celebrity,
yeah,
regardless. And Trump kind of harnessed that in addition to the political expediency of some of the Tea Party type policies. So he's sort of his unique brand. And that, you know, is in large part, you know, it's the force of his personality and the force of his celebrity that he kind of harnessed into politics. But that he did the same thing in real estate as well, and he became less a developer and more a brand manager.
Right.
You know, the buildings with his name on it, he didn't necessarily build; he just rented out his name essentially, and that became associated with a degree of either physical attributes or level of service or whatever it may have been.
Yeah.
But it all comes back, according to the Times, to, you know, his father's wealth and how he was able to evade, you know, a tax bill of maybe $500 million on ultimately that, you know, the Times said he paid about $50 billion, or at least, you know, the family did. And he, I think it's important to note
$50 million.
Was right. $50 million. Sorry, the brother noted in the piece that, you know, this is all done appropriately and that, you know, let his parents' souls rest.
Uh-huh. This is not about them.
We shouldn't forget either that Alan Weisselberg, the man who was in control of the Trump finances for decades, including over his father's and then over the President Trump's before he was president, is cooperating with the feds. He was granted immunity. And so he has a treasure trove of information on his father and also the president.
Ultimately, though, I think, too, what's raised in the Times is far too old to ever be prosecuted, although the New York State Department of Taxation, you know, under whose watch all of this, in theory, went down, said that it would take a look. And I guess at most, there could be some kind of, you know, penalty or back taxes demanded, something like that, that could result from this. But,
you know, I always go back to the seminal interview with Donald Trump that we did in 2015, in June of 2015. And I'm like, what do you need all this for? It's going to drive your kids crazy and it's going to ruin your business. Why do you want to do this? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
See you, bro.
All right. There he goes. Kathmandu, Aaron Katursky, ABC News. All right, let's check in with Judy Pollack, who does not have a nickname because she'd kill me if I gave her one.
That's right. You can call me Judy. The Secret Service confirming a suspicious envelope addressed to the president.
It's the Rogan Show with Anna DeBlasis right here on 720 WGN.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was just complaining about the Bears.
I can't believe that. What is going on?
I don't know.
It's a reflex for many in this town.
You're used to that go-to.
I'm having an emotional moment.
But there's nothing to criticize right now.
Our Bears insider Adam Hogue joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline.
You know, my favorite quote from when Trubisky talked to ESPN, he said, hopefully I can look back at this game and say, this is where it all started.
Oh, I hope so.
And that just sounded so good.
I hope he's right. I think I have to say, it's not, you know, I wasn't perfect. I was watching Patrick Mahomes last night.
Yep.
And I'm struggling to remember his dad as a Chicago Cub. I'm just trying to put him in my mind. Just one time he was on the mound. Just one time.
I got nothing on that.
Like, in his, I remember the name. I remember when I saw Patrick Mahomes getting drafted. Pat Mahomes, man, that's a name I've heard of before. And, of course, because he was a Chicago Cub for, two seasons, I think, back in the late 90s. And, it's cool, man. I mean, you know, it's like, it's cool. But I don't think that Mitchell Trubisky quite has that Patrick Mahomes, man, has got a leadership thing unlike I have seen. He is like in total control of that offense.
Well, he kind of has that Brett Favre flair to him where he's just slinging confidence and he's slinging the football around because he has a huge arm. I think Mitch has leadership too, though. He is in full command of that locker room. I think he's still working on the offense part, but you know, it's possible they're both good.
See, that's my point. Look, Patrick Mahomes can be great. So can Mitch Trubisky. I mean, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning played at the same time. Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger played at the same time. Aaron Rodgers has one Super Bowl. How many Super Bowls does Ben Roethlisberger have?
Tom Brady has five. But what?
Just
why do you have to bring that up?
Well, Kevin brought it up.
Let me say this: that the one thing I fear is he's Tony Romo. You know, that was always kind of sort of there,
not quite ever did.
Yeah, but we'll see. Sunday again. I got to think positivity now.
Yeah, I'm excited.
As Stevie Wonder would say, it's got to be fantastical and positivity. I have to have this moment where I need to take a sip of the Kool-Aid and move toward it because it was the most fun I have had in a single half at a Bears game ever.
Oh wow, that's saying something.
And been going my whole life, and that was the crowd was so into it, was so cool. Because I think Adam, to your point, I think everybody in the stadium was like, "This is the moment. This could be it."
Well, and first of all, that's like the best quarterback performance any of us have ever seen in our lives.
Right. It's true. By Chicago Bears. Yeah.
by a Chicago Bear. I mean, that's actually true. Six touchdowns, it's just not something you see very often. You're probably not going to see it again, I mean, this year at least. I mean, if he does do that regularly, like Aaron Rodgers sometimes does, then that's certainly a win for everyone. But I think it's just, to me, it was putting together everything that we just were like the first 3 weeks, man, those throws are there. The guys are open. Just hit the throws. If you just make the throw, everything would be a lot easier. And then all of a sudden on Sunday, he didn't just do it once. He didn't just do it twice. He did it like seven times. He had seven throws over 20 yards in the air that were completed, and he was on point on almost all of them.
And there were specific throws at him that he had missed through the first 3 weeks. I brought this up with these guys and OB yesterday. It was that specific Taylor Gabriel route where it's kind of an out corner route in the slot, and he's missed them twice this year, wide open, Green Bay, and then I think in week three. But then early in the first half, they ran that same exact play. Nagy says he's going to keep trusting Trubisky. Clearly he does. And he nailed him right in the numbers. Well, and that was like, boom, yes. Okay, that's a moment where you can specifically say progress was made.
I would say that about...
he missed him the snap before. He missed him, and then they went right back to it, and he nailed it.
Yes, and right. I would say that about a third of his pass attempts that he made that were completions were not exactly where you'd want it to be. There was either a bad defensive play or the receiver had to come back for it, make a very athletic play to get to it. And I think that gets better over time. I don't have those guys bearing down on me and running and throwing and everything. But Patrick Mahomes made it look so easy last night. It was just
he did.
It was just unbelievable.
Fun. And their defense is nowhere near what the Bears is, right? Isn't that correct?
Oh no, the Chiefs have it. Yeah, their defense is atrocious, to be honest.
So it's really all on them. The offense.
Yeah, I mean, they're benefiting because the Broncos' offense isn't very good, so that's why that game was close last night.
That AFC West, though, man. Because if you're of a certain age in this town, the AFC West meant everything to you because that was the only other game you got on a Sunday was an AFC West. You got the Bears game at noon or 1. I mean, if you're old enough to remember, it would start at actual 1. And then on the West Coast, you would so NBC would have the West Coast games,
mm-hmm.
or it would have the AFC games, and you'd end up always watching the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Chargers, or the Raiders, and so we just Chicago fans have certainly just got stuck in those players and in those franchises, and the Kansas City Chiefs. I got to think about the Kansas City Chiefs for a second. Kansas City Chiefs, you know, they have. It's the Lamar Hunt Trophy is the trophy you get for winning the AFC, like you would get the Halas Trophy for winning the NFC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Hunt was the guy who invented the Kansas City Chiefs. They are the seminal American Football League franchise, and it is a great tradition. And those fans are insane. The AFC West fans are the craziest fans you're going to find, you know, in football outside, I think, of here.
I credit the Chiefs' recent success, Adam, to Matt Nagy spending some time there over the past couple of years.
Oh, look at that!
Okay.
That's my spin zone. Adam, the only real two blemishes from Sunday, Akeem Hicks losing it and Sam Acho done for the year, pec tear. Do you anticipate Hicks being suspended? Is that pretty much a foregone conclusion? We still haven't heard from the NFL on it, so what are you anticipating?
Yeah, and I was trying to get an answer from the NFL today, and obviously I didn't. It's been silent on that regard. I don't know if it was taking a couple days. They probably want to hear from Hicks. They probably want to hear from the referee that got shoved.
Yeah, that guy had it coming.
Yeah.
He deserved it.
Right. That guy had it coming. You know, and if I'm Akeem Hicks, I'm like, yeah, that man had it coming, man. And
the video is pretty inconclusive, though. So, that could actually work in Hicks's favor.
Well, because he rushed. So here's what happened.
Hicks is like the largest human on the planet. If you come even close to him, you're going to go flying. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, even the slightest nudge from Akeem Hicks is going to send
these guys,
a grown man.
These guys had been hand fighting the entire day,
right?
And so it got very ticky tacky away from the ball, away from the play. And these two guys, the defensive guy for the the what's their calls, the Tampa Bay's, were got into a bad way with Hicks, and they started shoving each other. The official comes over, tries to get in the middle of it, and then the official, who looked to be about 3'7",
everybody does next to
right.
Akeem
he was
Hicks,
probably 5'10", but he looked 3'7". He pushes him apart, and then they are apart, and then Hicks does that thing where I guess the other guy said something to him, and Hicks rushes back at him. Now, the whistle's already blown. There's no playing going on here. This is all, you know, extracurricular activity, and the official goes down.
Yeah, that was not good.
That was
not our proudest moment.
Yeah. It's against the rules. You can't do it. He's definitely going to get fined. He did miss half the game already, though, and I do wonder if that'll factor into whether or not he'll get a suspension since he already sat out a full half.
Maybe that'll count to time served.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Your Honor.
He's already been out a half game.
A Cook County lawyer. Your Honor, Mike Lane, Akeem Hicks.
Akeem
Hicks.
He's learned his lesson.
He's an honorable man. He was actually, let's be honest, he was in fear for his life and the life and safety of the other players on the field, and felt it imperative that he neutralized the threat immediately. And if the umpire, referee, whatever, what have you, was in the way, then I'm sorry.
Yeah, time served. Mm-hmm. Can you explain just one thing? This whole Willy Wonka thing, it seemed to go a little crazy. Kevin and Ro were talking about the one play that was called that. But
yeah.
The Chicago Bears have even tweeted out a video about Welcome to Our Football Factory. They painted Soldier Field purple, and it's like it's taken on a new like a
year 3-1. I love it, but hold on.
They're running with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'm just glad it worked the second time, because the first time they tried to run it, there was a false start.
There you go. Hello.
We cannot criticize these Bears for anything from that
Adam,
game.
That's exactly what I just said to them before, which is be a little careful about this, because when Chase Daniels looks like he's like an instruction pilot sitting next to him, right? Like he's going to stand next to him, and go, all right, here's what you do. You know, yeah. That sort of trickery. You got Jordan Howard is one of the great power runners in the NFL.
But Adam,
I
had to remind all them, what happened when they ran it a second time? An easy touchdown.
Yeah, from 2 yards up, but they would have had an easy touchdown anyway. And they're shovel passing. I'm sorry. I'm almost going to call back the extra touchdown there, you know, that gets them the six touchdowns.
It's like a hot potato thing. He had the ball for like a split second.
It was well timed. I mean, you got to give him great credit for that. But is a shovel pass really a pass? Is it really? I used to, like, when we were playing sandlot ball, that was a forward lateral. It was illegal.
Yeah, it's a forward pass. If he had dropped it, it would have been incomplete. It wouldn't have been a fumble.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I did like Matt Nagy's explanation though, because. You know, there's a lot of moving pieces there. Everyone's in motion, and they're like, if you were to in the huddle, like say every part of that play, then everyone would just be like, wait, what's going on? And everyone knows.
All right, you go 5 yards in button hook. All right, I need you to go 15 yards in a slant. We're on the 2 yard line, man. It doesn't matter. Just go through the end zone. It doesn't matter. All right, now what you're gonna do on three, I'm gonna say this and you start in motion, and then I'm gonna go back, I'm gonna fake like I'm handing it to this guy, then I'm gonna throw it to you, okay? On two.
Yeah.
Willy Wonka. Just a whole lot easier.
I
like that.
Okay. Hey, you know what? I must give Nagy and his offensive coordinating team a lot of credit here for getting these guys ready in a complicated scenario. Because it does seem like it's now gelling for them. That first weekend in Green Bay, they didn't feel comfortable in it. And they hadn't practiced any of it through the preseason because none of the starters got any real time.
Well, and I thought the best example of that where it was coming together was the throw to Josh Bellamy, because that happened because they've run so many of these bubble screens the first couple weeks where Bellamy's just out there blocking, and so it's on tape and everyone's seeing it, and the Bucs looked at it, and so when they run that same play, of course the defenders are going to bite on the fake throw to Tariq Cohen on the screen, and that allowed Josh Bellamy to run free. So
yes.
What we've seen the first few weeks is, okay, they're doing great on the first couple drives when everything's unscouted and they're putting new plays out there. But now what we're seeing is later in the game, they're running different plays off those same formations now that it's all out there on tape. So that's really the evolution of Matt Nagy's system, and I think that's going to continue to snowball as the season goes along.
I like the idea. I agree with you. I'm very hopeful for it. Although bringing Ralph Bellamy back like this, or whatever, Bill Bellamy, what is his name? last season there were three guys on the team that I literally wanted to have arrested for general mopery, and he was one of them.
He was like their number one receiver. That's how bad the receiving core was last year.
How many times did you see a ball go right through his hands?
Brutal.
Right. Yeah. And so seeing him get a little confidence, because he's not a key guy. No. Although now what's interesting, now Kevin White, why does he still have a job? Can you explain that to me? Although he did make a monster block in the game
He actually did block very well. I know that's not what fans want to hear from a number one wide receiver who's done next to nothing in 4 years. But, you know, he's out there right now. I have to imagine, again, Matt Nagy keeps saying, patience, patience, patience. Okay. Eventually, on one of these plays where he's out there blocking, and the defense saying, oh, we don't have to pay attention to number 11, they haven't thrown him a ball all season, then that's when they're going to throw him a ball, and it's going to be some big play. So,
okay. All right. I'm going to be patient. Just don't bring me the two quarterback look anymore.
It's a long 4-year con with Kevin White. That's what it's all building up to one play.
That's right, exactly. It's the long game. They're playing the long game here. This is not, right. I see what they're doing. All right. Got it. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Adam Hogue.
Thanks, Adam.
Bears Insider right now. Let's get ready. You want to play News or Ruse? 312-981-7200. We're going to play some News or Ruse here. 312-981-7200. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Is the Kavanaugh FBI investigation over?
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan!
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. All right, this is a big deal we have right now.
It is.
Now, I want to point out that, and this rarely happens, that we have such a huge thing to give away. Grand prize winner gets a pair of tickets to our catered super suite for the Blackhawks home opener on Sunday. It's an original six matchup featuring a special pregame ceremony honoring Stan Mikita. Tickets for all games this season are on sale at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. And a Never Measure. I got to just tell you something.
Yeah.
This Never Measure is my favorite thing that I own.
What are you
measuring with it? I go to my wall and I measure from end to end. I press a button and it just does it for me. Because it's one of those laser measures that allows you to hang your wall decorations. You don't have to figure out fractions anymore and how far this has to go and that has to go. It's the best thing ever.
I need that.
Oh, it's the best. Nevermeasure.com is where you find those things. Mm-hmm. And then the runners-up get a pair of tickets to Avenue Q, now playing at the Mercury Theater, Chicago. It's a laugh-out-loud puppet comedy. And who doesn't need one of those? For tickets, call 773-325-1700 or visit mercurytheaterchicago.com. All right. Oh, and they get a Never Measure, too. Everybody's got everything that they could possibly need here.
Mm-hmm. Everybody wins. Doing.
Everybody wins. All right. You know who's in the studio with us? Now, these two, my God, do they have patience? Do they have patience? Because last week they were here to play News or Ruse, and we had a crazy news thing happen, as often will pop up at moments like this, and we had to push them off for a week. It's Pat Lanzini and Carolyn Cerf, and they are here. They're volunteers for the Great Highwood Pumpkin Fest, which is returning this weekend, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Up in Highwood. This is a gigantic.
It's the best. One of my favorite fall events, no joke. It is so much fun.
It is actually becoming the largest pumpkin festival in the Midwest.
Really?
And that's saying something, because pumpkins are all from the Midwest.
They are.
I mean, Illinois is the number one pumpkin producer in the world, as we like to say. The money here, it's a benefit for Make-A-Wish, Illinois,
indeed.
Right? So that's a really, really cool thing.
This is our third year partnering with Make-A-Wish Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great is that all the proceeds that come from the Pumpkin Fest goes to Make-A-Wish Illinois. So all that money stays here for the kids of Illinois that want wishes.
How cool is that?
And Highwood is one of my favorite. My whole life, Highwood has been one of my favorite towns.
Something special
ever.
About it.
Yeah, it's very cool. And it used to be dangerous cool. Now it's like
cool.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh yes. It was not the kind of place that you wanted to just be walking around it.
The railroad tracks, like along there.
Yeah, something.
Well, did you know that Highwood was in the Guinness Book of Records years ago for the most drinking establishments in the square mile town?
Oh yeah. Because it was like two blocks. And everything was a bar. or a pawn shop and Nightingales, which
many,
is, of course,
how many, how many years ago are we talking about? Because I've only known it as a very nice upscale place.
1970s and 1970s.
Well, now 90,000 people want to come for Pumpkin Fest this weekend, at least. I mean, little town of 5,000 people in Highwood brings 90,000 people. It's incredible.
Pound for pound now, it has the best restaurants in America. Absolutely. And per square foot.
For sure.
And it is just, it is spectacular. And so it's quaint and cute.
It
and
is.
Nice.
It reminds me of like Stowe, Vermont.
I mean, yeah, so, I've been to Stowe.
It's so, like, at points New England-y and Mayberry-esque. And,
yeah.
Right, otherworldly.
It's awesome.
So there used to be Nike missiles just parked in a parking lot right there. And now look at it.
Just look at it.
Yeah.
You can go in and you can carve a pumpkin because every year you try to set the world record. And you've made it several times, too, haven't you?
We have. The current record is 30,581 or 800. My dyslexic. I'm dyslexic. But it's around 30,000.
You'll be great at this game, then. All right, here we go. We got to play. Hey, news or ruse. Tony is playing with Judy. Let's meet our people here. Tony playing with Judy, Adrian playing with Violetta, and Dan is playing with Pat and Carolyn. You guys are playing together. So one would imagine there's an advantage here. But you got to look out because Judy will try to hurt one of you. And Violetta wins this like every week
now. She's sneaky.
She's beaten Judy. She's now the all-time champ in news or ruse, and it's just not right.
Doesn't make sense.
All right. So, Tony, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, Judy, Tony, here.
I think that's fake news. I don't think she's
is your true. Headline. No, I said it myself.
Oh, then it is true.
Smash and grab thieves hit pot shop, but only got away with oregano. Huh. Oh, very interesting.
I think that's ruse.
Yeah. Okay, ruse.
Oh, out of the gates, Tony. Wow.
Come on, Adrian.
All right, Adrian and Violetta, are you ready for your headline? Here it is.
Yes, I am.
Seal slaps man in the face with an octopus.
It could be the singer seal.
I just need an answer here. I like how she's complicating it. What do you think, Adrian?
I think it's news.
Me too, news. You got it. That happened.
Yep. All right, and now this is Pat and Carolyn, don't freak out. Dan, definitely don't freak out. Here is your headline. Dan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, good. Canadian military okays beards as long as they're not hipster style.
Ah! What is hipster style beard?
I think that's like the really kind of long in the front and manicured. Mm-hmm. It's like, just imagine, there's got to be five or six bartenders in Highwood who have the...
Right.
The
you're definitely. Talking about the Civil War reenactment look. Is not the
long ones.
No.
It's really very coiffed and, you know, it's hipster.
Like, right. Anyway, I say it's news.
I say it's news.
All right. We have a majority.
All right.
You got it.
That's it. That's correct.
Well done.
All right. Round two. Tony and Judy.
Okay. Time for redemption. Rural West Virginia emergency rooms overwhelmed with teens suffering Trump Cole challenge injuries.
Judy, you want to help me here?
Yeah.
Cole challenge?
Trump Cole challenge injuries.
Yeah. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
There you go.
Way to call it out.
Yeah, snip that one out. All right, here we go. Violetta and Adrian. Dog gets sick from eating cannabis-laced poop at West Park. New West Park.
Adrian.
I think it's news.
Okay, news.
Oh, it is.
Gross.
Unfortunately, it is.
Totally happened.
All right, you want to keep this competitive, ladies.
Yes.
All right, Dan.
Pat and Carolyn. Dan.
Yeah, I'm here.
Here's the headline. Tornado warning interrupts This Is Us season premiere in Detroit area. Fans outraged.
Oh, that's true.
That really could be true.
You think it's true?
I say it's true.
I'm not saying it's headline worthy, but it could be true.
Okay, let's go with it.
That happened.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know those This Is Us people, man. They are so intense.
Totally.
Wait a second. Sterling K. Brown's going to cry, man. So, Abby, stop.
There's a lot of crying.
Cry.
There's a lot of... You can't interrupt that when you're just about to cry.
Yeah.
I'm DVRing it.
Yeah.
Check
I don't understand what goes on in that show. Every time I turn it on, someone's dying in a fire and other people are crying. You're like,
right.
Oh,
very
so
emotional.
It's so uplifting. All right. Hold on. We'll get back to news or ruse right here as we continue to play. But first, let's check in. Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour news? Do you know?
I have no idea.
I didn't think so. Violetta.
Jamie Allen, the most televised magician in all of Britain, joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning at 8:40, followed by Ro Khan at 9:40.
Yeah, that's right. That's a big deal right there. Yeah. Coming up, the stories that matter from the WGN Newsroom, brought to you by Northwestern Medicine. Nice. Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, I should say.
Thank you.
All right. Judy will not be doing that. Andrea, I'm assuming, will be doing that. And
you are correct.
Judy does not know what's happening in the news and no longer cares. As soon as she did that time card thing, she put it in the machine.
Mm-hmm.
She clocked out and was like, I don't know.
Not me.
I don't know nothing. All right, we're playing News or Ruse, and we've got the Great Highwood Pumpkin Fest participants here. These are the organizer types. They're the people who make sure everything works here because it benefits Make-A-Wish Illinois, which is an amazing thing.
Really
it's going
is.
On this weekend. If you've not been to the Highwood Pumpkin Fest, you've got to try this. 90,000 people descend on Highwood. And it's the best food. It's the best drink. And they set a record for carving of pumpkins. That's what they do. All right, we're going to start here with Tony and Judy. You got to get this right. Otherwise, you're out. You
okay.
understand that?
Don't you threaten me.
Okay. This is the Orion Samuelson round. Here you go. Let us take a listen. Here is your headline.
Tampa man vandalized cars that reminded him of college bullies.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
Wow is right. Like what, a Corvette? Or, well, I guess that could happen. What do you think?
Judy, what do you think?
I think it's true.
I'm going to follow you and say it's true.
Oh, you stay alive. Look
well
at that.
Well done.
All right, Adrian and Violetta, here is your headline.
Using emojis to teach Shakespeare will not help disadvantaged students.
No, it will not. What do you think?
Oh, goodness.
It might be.
What do you think, Violetta?
It might be too easy to be true, but you call it quick. Go with your gut.
I think it's ruse.
Ruse. Dang it! Don't hold your gut.
All right, Dan, Pat, Carolyn, here is your chance for the steal. This is the moment where you just win the whole thing. This would be a win-win-win-win-win. Don't you think it would be a win-win-win-win?
Yeah, it would be. How about that?
All right, here we go. Here is your headline.
Ukraine's Dolphin Army in patriotic hunger strike after Russian capture.
It is so ruse.
Mm-hmm, ruse.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a ruse, but are they just trying to... It just sounds ridiculous, but... Can you repeat that?
I'll repeat it in English for you. Ukraine's Dolphin Army in patriotic hunger strike after Russian capture.
A dolphin hunger strike.
I'm going to say that's news.
It's a ruse.
All right. I need an answer from the team here. You go with the caller? I mean, it's, you know.
Should we defer to the caller?
I need an answer right now. Deferring to the caller? Yes?
News. Yeah.
Wow. Does seem like a strange one, but
you
it's
win.
True.
Sure.
Congrats, Dan.
Way
to go, Pat and Carolyn.
Right. We'll see you up at the suite on Sunday. That's going to be fun, the super suite. And you got a never measure. How about that? I'm telling you, man. I mean, the super suite is a cool thing. It's Hawks opening night. Very emotional evening.
Yeah.
Stan Mikita. Mm-hmm. But then I'm going to tell you, you're going to go home and play that never measure like never before. you're going to measure everything.
Don't bring it to the suite because that would be weird.
How far apart is this fork and knife? And you press a button and it'll tell you. All right. Hold on a second. We'll get everybody's information there. Very, very well done. And thank you guys for being here. And thank you for coming back again because I know you were supposed to be here last week.
Yeah, that was cool
week,
of you.
Thanks for having
Highwood, us. Highwoodpumpkinfest.org is the place where you can go right to get information.
Right. Because that is and totally worth it too. It's going to be a ton of fun. And like I said, Highwood is always a great place to be. Great place. And
it is.
If you're not from the North Shore, a lot of people in the North Shore go to Highwood. If you're not from the North Shore and you want a really cool culinary adventure, just see a little bit of history and the old Fort Sheridan is right there. There's still some of the military
buildings
there.
Great restaurants, phenomenal restaurants.
Cool.
You know, what's really great is that the restaurants and the business we start off our festival season in April, and we go all through the spring.
It's like every other day there's a
Bloody
festival
Mary
there.
Fest,
it's like crazy how many
fest.
There are.
Yeah, Bloody Mary Fest, Garlic Fest, Tackle Fest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the businesses, they're so involved with all these festivals, but with Pumpkin Fest, pretty much the main drag of Highwood is shut down for 4 days. And to get this going, and they are so supportive, and they're just really into it, and then the supporters that we have,
the Metro if you can do it too.
Oh yeah, it stops right there, right downtown.
It's a perfect way to do it.
All our restaurants are still open. Plus, we've got dozens of food vendors for bars, thanks to Tito's Handmade Vodka
Tito's.
That's a party right there.
All right, without our awesome partners. So
thank you very much. Appreciate it. We'll see you out at Highwood.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got Andre Darla standing by with the WGN is coming your way from the Northwestern, WGN Northwestern Newsroom right after. There's a-